This is a Pod Dealers Network podcast.
Just to let you know, this week, Erykah Badu decided to sell a incense with the scent of her vagina. Sold out in 19 minutes. Ain't no punchline to that when that shit actually happened. All right, let's go.
What is TWS podcast, episode, whatever, who cares at this point?
The rants with the vindicated.
It's my podcast and I do what I want to.
People, listen.
Word, is it still live?
It's not working for me, Rich. All right, we're going to keep going.
I know I changed my voice at work.
Bars on the radio.
What is TWS podcast?
One's ready.
I feel like the Neanderthal.
Staring at my watch and I'm feeling so new school.
Suicide attempts, how many tries to take?
Damn, they ain't ready.
My eyes are green, 'cause I eat a lot of vegetables. It don't have nothing to do with your new friend.
Tell him again. All right, welcome back to another episode of the What Is TWS podcast. As always, I am J.Dot Flan, representing the White Pants Society. And thank you for rocking with me one more again. Before I get into any topics this week, I only really have one topic. You'll see what it is in a minute. I do want to, from time to time, you know, I need to get the evil out. So I need to do that right now, if y'all can bear with me for a second. Because I had some concerns. I am concerned about, and not because people bought this vagina-scented incense. For all I know, it smells like strawberries. I don't know. She eats a lot of vegetables. She seemed like if anybody found a cheat code on how to, you know, manufacture scents from her nether regions, it'd be Erykah Badu. So it's not the fact that people bought the incense that's concerning me. It's just that it's her incense, you know, and I think we've seen the effects that her lady parts seem to have on people. I mean, let's just look at the track record, right? J-Elect took a sniff, and then we've been waiting on that dude's debut album for, you know, a decade now. I think he said it's coming out next month, and fingers crossed, looking forward to it. But yeah, that happened. Andre inhaled, and then now he drops a verse, like a verse, you know, once a year, and he quickly went from like wearing Braves jerseys to perms and leprechaun suits. Like it happened, like just like that. Hey Y'all was dope. Don't get me wrong. Hey Y'all is a dope song. But something clearly happened to him between Southern Playalistic and The Love Below. I mean, peep the title. See what I'm saying? Then Common. You know, Common did a line. And next time we saw him, he was wearing crochet pants. He talked about it. But let's be real. Like, that was the sequence of events. He also dropped the album Electric Circus, which I do think is a great album, but there's definitely some music on there that sounds like a Jimi Hendrix acid trip. He possibly could have been under the influence. And that's, you know, and I feel like there's just a common denominator with these issues, with these circumstances. And now we have this thing. I wish I could find a better word than this thing. But now we have this essence that we've seen its possible impact. I ain't going to say for sure we got to blame all those situations on Erykah, but common denominator again. So you've seen the possible impact of this essence. And now it has the ability to spread to like rooms of people at a time simultaneously. Like we could be on the verge of some bath salts type epidemic. Like, I'm just saying, people, be prepared. You know how I am, you know. Just be safe out there, folks. Know that it's out there. There's people out there with these incense sticks, and you know, the same way y'all be all up in arms about vaping. We don't know the long term effects of this incense. We don't know. We've seen a couple cases. I'm just saying, we don't know what's gonna happen if a whole room get hit with it all at the same time. All right, that's me getting evil. I appreciate the moment. I want to make a correction from my last episode. It was pointed out to me. I think I gave the year that my grandma passed as 2013, when in actuality it was 2003. In 2003, I was 20. In 2013, I would have been well into my 30s. So, yeah. Hopefully I ain't throw nobody off too much. I was 20 years old when all that stuff happened. Not a past, but just want to make sure I get that corrected. And with all the fun stuff out of the way, I got to get into this topic. And this is I wrote a lot of this down. I'm probably going to go off script. I hope it doesn't go too off the rails. I'm going to try to keep it in a considerate time frame. I don't want to lose you guys. But I've been wanting to do this for a while, and I really was waiting for this time to do it. I touched on a lot of this briefly in past episodes. I even talked a lot about it on my guest spot on Just Say Words a couple months back. But last week was the 1 year anniversary of my suicide attempt, February 14th, somewhere in that area, but around Valentine's Day of last year. I'll get into why I couldn't give you an exact date, but I knew I wanted to go more in depth in the story and kind of tell the story a little bit, and I thought maybe the year mark would be an appropriate time. I wasn't sure how I'd feel about it a year later, and surprisingly, this has been a very good week for me, partly because it also marked 1 year of sobriety for me, and I don't know. You know, that was an accomplishment, and that's a long way to have come from the story I'm about to tell. And I guess also because, you know, strangely enough, as traumatic as an event as it feels like it was supposed to have been, like the moment it was, for lack of a better word, over, like I think I was over it then, and it's just been a process of moving forward. I do want to throw out a disclaimer. I may seem to make light of some of these events and situations that are very serious. I acknowledge that they are very serious, but just understand that levity is a coping mechanism for me. If I can find a way to laugh at something, then it doesn't hold power over me anymore. And to be honest, some shit is just funny in retrospect. Sometimes you look back at shit that happened to you. It is funny. Or hilariously sad, but, you know, we can laugh at these things. Like, so don't feel like you can't laugh. I'm going to laugh. I think some of this shit is funny. I wouldn't talk about it if I did. And then some of it's going to be gross. It's going to be pretty gross. It's going to be embarrassingly gross. But, you know, being open and honest is a core principle of this podcast. So I think y'all are used to it by now, or should be. But anyway, man, let's get into it. So I'm going to say it all started with alcoholic water. And I've talked about alcoholic water. I did a rant about alcoholic water, and maybe you understand why I hate it so much. And I think that it's the end of society as we know it. But about a week or so before the whole like incident, I tried alcoholic water for the first time. I think it was White Claw. White Claw was the brand. And I ain't afraid to say their name because, you know, I ain't looking for endorsements or anything like this. I feel like this is going to be a real review of their product. They should probably put this shit on the side of the can, like, you know, like the same way they do the side effects at the end of those pharmaceutical commercials. Like, if you drink this, I don't know, some of this shit might happen to you. But yeah, I was living in an extended stay hotel at the time. I had just come off a homie's couch. I was living, you know, with my buddy you know, rent free, which is not a circumstance. I don't believe in that for men. I don't endorse that for men. Living any, even when somebody offers you the opportunity to live someplace rent free, and I only say I don't endorse it for men because I'm a man and I have no idea what it's like to be a woman. You know, it's not like I'm judging or telling women what they can and cannot do. I don't endorse it for men because I, you know, there's a certain pride level, I believe, with men, and taking something for free, especially like shelter, like room and board, it can be quite a hit. It can be quite a hit to your pride. And so I was in a negative space when I finally moved to this extended stay. The way I left the homie's house wasn't under good terms. None of it was a good time. But I ended up in this extended stay hotel. At the time, I moved out there because I had landed my dream job with a great company. I had the title that I wanted. I was making decent money. I was coming back from another, you know, I don't know, fucked up time with alcohol where I had lost my job, my wife had left, and I was bouncing back from that. So I was on like my third or fourth comeback, and I was like, this comeback was looking epic because I had landed this amazing job. It just so happened to be like on the other side of town. And so my reason for leaving my homie's house is I was spending like $100 a day Ubering back and forth to work. And it was turning out to be more financially feasible for me to pay to live in this hotel closer to work than it was to try to commute back and forth every day. So anyway, I move out there. So now I'm in, I got this dream job, right? And I'm living in this hotel. I got a script here, people, so I'm trying to I'm new to this. I'm living in this hotel and I'm alone. Like I'm really, really alone. And for me, when I'm alone, that gives my mind too much time to work. And my mind is a terrible thing to waste. My mind cannot be idle. Like I have to be focused on something or working on something. Which is one of the reasons why I try to take on all these projects and try to be as creative as I possibly can. Because if I'm not like creating and working towards something, you know, my mind will take me places I don't want to be. So I'm in this hotel room alone, and you know, I'm going to this job, and it's my dream job, but you know, my mind is convincing me that I'm just one moment away from getting fired, that they're about to realize like that I'm not qualified for this. And, you know, I don't know. They plotting on me like this is not going to work out. So I turned my dream job into a nightmare because I would sit there just in paranoia and fear on a daily basis. And you know, maybe some people in the IT world can relate certain jobs. And it seems like, you know, like the higher up the totem pole you get, a lot of them, your job is to be there and to be available. So there may not necessarily every day be work for you to do, or, you know, like if something doesn't go wrong or something doesn't break, or there's not something new to figure out or something new to design, you may have a lot of free time on your hands to be figuring out or predicting what to do next or stuff like that, but there may not be a whole lot of direction on a daily basis as to what you're supposed to do. So I'm coming to work and I'm not necessarily having a lot to do, and I'm not necessarily having a lot of involvement or, you know, communication from people because they don't need to talk to me unless they need to talk to me. And you know, it's like every time a coworker is having a conversation that's like slightly out of earshot, you know, in my mind, they talking about me. I work with a lot of foreigners in IT, and so they may be having conversations close enough that I can hear, but in a language that I can't understand. And in my mind, you're talking about me. And it just became hell on earth. Like, I just went to work every day just, like, super paranoid, super worried, just waiting to lose this job. Even after I got, like, a great review and they gave me a, a bonus, even though I had only been there a couple months. Like, things were going well for me. And every time I when they called me in the office for my review, I thought I was getting fired. And they called me to tell me I was getting a bonus. But, yeah, and then I was taking all of that angst and all of that worry, and I was taking it back to this hotel room by myself. And, you know, there was nobody there. And my wife had left, so I didn't have my best friend anymore to talk to. I didn't have my daughter as, you know, as a distraction, something to get lost in, something, you know, something more important than myself to worry about. So I just had me in this room and this job. And it was crazy because this was actually one of the first times I had been somewhere where there wasn't a liquor store around me. And that was shocking to me because I feel like liquor stores follow me. I feel like, you know, there were people who knew, like, hey, you know, so-and-so moving over here, he probably put our kids through college. He's a steady customer. It might be beneficial for us to open up. Like, I felt like there may not have been a liquor store in areas before I got there, but once I got there, it was there within days. And here I was in a place where it wasn't no liquor store, man. Like, it wasn't, so I was just, I don't know, for at least a good week or so, I was maintaining sobriety, but I was suffering through it. I was white knuckling through it, and I was depressed and not in a great place. And that's crazy. I don't necessarily think a lot of people understand that about depression. Like something like getting my dream job, you know, something like that should have been the beginning of me climbing out of something. Really, you know. My mind twisted it into something that pushed me, that dug me deeper into the hole. Dug me deeper and deeper into the hole. And so anyway, eventually I figured out that they got apps where you can get alcohol delivered. Again, and this is another, like, fall of society. The fuck? Like, you just, like, who needs... I guess maybe you throwing a party, plan. Like, don't throw a party and don't have the shit and you got to go get it delivered. Don't nobody want to make the run. If don't nobody want to make the run, don't nobody want to drink. I just, these apps, like, who is the person that can't make it to the liquor store? If they can't make it to the liquor store, maybe that's a sign that they shouldn't be drinking, or, you know what I mean? It definitely was for me. It definitely was for me. But I found these apps where you can have shit delivered. And so that became a part of my daily routine. It became the thing for me to look forward to at work. If I could get up, if I can go to work, if I could suffer through it, if I could sit at that desk and deal with whatever I was dealing with, I knew at the end of the day, you know, I was going to have my little reward. I was going to be able to, you know, numb myself when I got back to the room, enough to get myself to sleep and back to work. You know, it got to the point where I'd be scrolling through the app in the Uber ride back to my hotel to, you know, pick out the bottle, and I'd be ordering it from the Uber so that by the time I got to the hotel, got settled, it'd be a knock on my door, and, you know, and there was my relief. So the water, to get back to where I started, and this is going to happen a lot, don't worry. The water, it was a result of the fact that I started running out of shit to try. Like, I was ordering so much every day that I was running out of things, you know, to drink. It was getting to the point, I was drinking so much, it was getting to the point that the sight of the bottles in the app could make me nauseous. Like, just scrolling through and thinking about vodka, like, ugh, I don't want, you know, or whatever cognac, ugh, I don't want that. Like, but I knew I had to have something. I knew it was no way I was going to make it through that night in that room by myself without something. You know, so eventually, you know, I landed on this alcoholic water, you know. I mean, that was really like, I don't know, it was really like rock bottom, you know. It's like, you know, when you tried everything, I think they should put this on the camera. You tried everything else, you know, why not get some seltzer in a can with some alcohol that you don't really know what it is. Throw some flavor in there so I could pretend like I'm drinking it for taste and not just because I'm trying to get drunk. but it's still disgusting. And yeah, it was so bad that I eventually chased. This is both alcoholic and a sign of how bad the water was. But I eventually chased the water with whiskey. Like, I was trying to get the water taste out of my mouth, so I drank whiskey behind it. And if you don't know this, and fuck all whiskey connoisseurs out there, it tastes like burnt wood. This is the truth. When they try to advertise it to you, they'll tell you what kind of wood barrel it was aged in, and the barrel is like charred. So the whiskey or the bourbon or whatever, it tastes like burnt wood, and they'll say all kinds of crazy shit to you.
And what you'll see is the softness coming through, but really notes like orange, citrus, marzipan.
Now, fuck that. It tastes like burnt wood. That's it. Bottom line. So that's where I was. That's where I was with all of this. Drinking alcoholic water, chasing it with whiskey, just to try to, you know, for me to try to make it through nights alone, you know, knowing I had to go back to this job that I had turned into a nightmare and really just, you know, not having shit else to do. So yeah, it reached a point where, you know, I was going to work hungover, and that was just adding to my fear that I was going to get fired. I was waiting for somebody to realize I was hungover or, you know, realize what was going on. And then of course it got to the point where I was drinking so much that I sometimes wouldn't show up, calling in sick a lot. And then from beyond that to just like, when I ran out of excuses, when I ran out of things that I thought were plausible excuses, I just wouldn't show up. Like, I would literally, like, wake up and be trying to will myself out of the bed, like laying there with my eyes open, still just like, get up, just go, just get up. And this would go on for, like, hours. And eventually I would just, you know, convince myself to take another shot or two, enough to get me not to think about it long enough to go back to sleep until it was, you know, late enough that it didn't feel like it was worth even going at that point. And so, yeah, that drove me to the decision-making point. I gave myself an ultimatum, and I feel like ultimatums are like they're rules that you know you're going to break. Like, you're giving yourself an ultimatum because you're saying, if I do this, now I have the liberty, or now I have a reason to make this other decision that I really want to make. But it's only because, you know, this didn't happen or this didn't fall through. So I gave myself an ultimatum, and the ultimatum was basically, if I missed another day of work, that, you know, I was going to execute this plan. I was going to take myself out of this place. I had reached a point where I started to feel like this was just who I was, this alcoholic person, and I didn't want to be this person anymore. And I couldn't see a way to not be this person. I just felt like, you know, this is a pattern. I've been here. I just left here, and now I'm right back here. And I don't want to do this cycle anymore. I want to get off the ride. I'm done. And so, yeah, I made myself this ultimatum so I could execute this plan. And the plans, right, here's the fucked up part. Like, here's where it gets crazy. This is the mind of an addict or an insane, depressed person. So about 6 months before all of this happened, when I was going through the last episode, you know, when my wife left and everything, I was hospitalized for severe dehydration and esophageal varices. This was after a bad drinking binge, you know, bad time. I won't even go into that, but this was a bad time. So I have a history of this shit. And varices are pretty much ulcers, ulcers in the esophagus. I had done so much damage with the drinking and the throwing up that, like, I had holes in my esophagus. And when I was in the hospital, the doctors pretty much told me, like, you got to stop drinking. Like, if you rupture these things again, we might not be able to stop the bleeding. And the insane sick part of my mind that still exist to this day that I have to control, that I have to be aware of and know that those thoughts aren't me. That's just, you know, my sickness talking. But that part of my mind was like light bulb.
Nothing.
You know, it was like, dude, we've been looking for a way to do this and couldn't figure one out. Like, I tried pills before, and I ain't have prescription stuff, so I was taking, like, Tylenol and Sudafed and shit, thinking if I just took enough of them, that would do it. And I pretty much threw them up whole. Like, I guess I failed at that one. I knew friends that had, like, weapons. I never had a gun, and then for some reason, like, whenever I was in the mindset of making these kind of decisions, I wasn't in the financial situation. I didn't have the finances to buy a weapon. And I didn't want to do that to somebody. Like, I didn't want to, hey, yo, let me borrow your gun. And then, you know, like, put that on them. Like, now they got to live with, they loaned me the gun. They did whatever. Like, because this was not about anybody else. I was not making this decision to hurt anyone. I was not making this decision to get back at anyone. This wasn't a revenge on the world. In my mind, this was me at my most merciful. I was relieving the world of the stress of having to deal with me. I was taking myself out of the equation so that people didn't have to. I couldn't hurt anyone anymore. People didn't have to worry about me anymore. I wouldn't become an embarrassment to my daughter, which I was, you know, deathly afraid of. And so, yeah, this, it wasn't about anybody else. It was about, you know, me just not wanting to be this person anymore. So anyway, when they told me, you know, that they might not be able to stop the bleeding, that was a light bulb moment. Like, okay, I know how I'm going to do it the next time. And that's just fucked up the next time. Anyway, so, yeah, of course, you know, I set the ultimatum, and of course, you know, I broke it. Another day came, and I didn't show up. And so that was just license to go through my plan. So I ordered two handles of the cheapest whiskey I could find, a handle being a half gallon. I knew at that point that, it, you know, two half gallons in a 24-hour period would be enough to get me to the point where I was throwing up enough that I would rupture the varices. And so I think this all started somewhere around the 12th or the 13th. I ordered the whiskey. I ordered Gatorade. I'm sorry that I'm laughing, because I know that this is not necessarily funny. It's funny to me because I'm here, you know. But yeah, I ordered Gatorade because, you know, the dehydration was the thing I was trying to avoid. Like, I wanted to bleed out, but I didn't want to be dehydrated. Why? Because that shit sucks. If you ever been dehydrated, it sucks orangutan balls. Like, it is the worst. Like you want water, but you can't have it. I didn't want the dehydration. So I felt like if I chased the whiskey with Gatorade, that would help keep me hydrated. But, you know, the irritation from the alcohol was going to do its job, rupture the varices. I could bleed out comfortably. I don't know. If you think drinking yourself to death sounds like a good idea, let me speak from experience. They say smart men learn from their own mistakes. Wise men learn from the mistakes of others. Let me impart some wisdom. Nah, it's not a good idea. There's no nice way that it's going to happen. It's going to suck. Just scratch it off the list. Like, hopefully you don't have a list, but if you know, it's going to be disgusting, and it's going to be, all right, so let's get into how it went down. So I bought the whiskey, Gatorade, and I bought these, I had some melatonin gummies because I had been having trouble sleeping. So I started pouring myself coffee cups of whiskey. I was down in the coffee cups of whiskey, chasing them with Gatorade. And yeah, whenever I felt like it, popping a melatonin gummy, because, you know, I really didn't want to be awake. I didn't want to be awake and thinking. Like, if I was thinking, I was upset, and I was, you know, I was thinking about, you know, everything I had done and everything I wouldn't be able to do and all this kind of stuff. And I had made my decisions. So I didn't want to be awake. So that leads to, I lost an entire 24-hour period. Like, so that's why I marked the 14th as the day, because the 14th is the day I really can't remember. And apparently some shit happened on the 14th, and I just don't remember. So I remember being awake like the evening of the 13th. And then I remember waking up again on the 14th and seeing it was 7 o'clock, and I assumed it was 7 a.m. But by the time I started watching TV, I realized it was 7 p.m. I had lost pretty much the whole day. And from the looks of the bathroom, I was not asleep that whole time. So, yeah, I had already started the process of throwing up. I was throwing up blood. There were other stains on the floor. I'll let you use your imagination with that. The Gatorade didn't work at all. I was clearly in the early stages of dehydration. I had drank both half gallons of whiskey. And at this point, I couldn't keep anything down, not water. I would sit in the bathroom and just run water on my hands. Like, just feeling water was some sort of relief. And in my mind, I was hoping like it's seeping into my skin and I'm rehydrating some way. I don't know. I don't know what I was thinking, but I would just run water on my hands and swish it around in my mouth and spit it out. Because if I swallowed it, then I was going to spend the next 15 minutes or so gagging until I finally like threw up some more blood. And if you know me, you know, like I'm deathly afraid of zombies. I have this fear and fascination of zombies. I have to watch the movies. I have to watch the shows, but I am very, very afraid of them. When I looked in the mirror, that's what I looked like to me. With the dehydration, my skin was dry and peeling, and you know, I had like blood around my mouth, and it was horrible. That hotel room was horrible. My ex-wife and a buddy of mine went to clean the place up while I was in the hospital, and it was the most embarrassing thing. It was one of the most embarrassing situations for me ever to know that they had to go in there and see that. I won't put you through too much of it, but I'll just tell you, it was blood everywhere. It was plates of blood. It's not funny. I gotta laugh though. It's like plates. The Gatorade bottles had turned into, you know, places I could throw up when I couldn't make it to the bathroom. I was also like, swishing water around in my mouth and then like spitting it in the Gatorade cups if I couldn't make it to the bathroom to spit it out because I couldn't swallow it. Bed was soaked. I had gotten to the point where I was just pouring buckets of water over me while I laid in the bed, because it just felt good to have the cool water on me. I was hot and I was dry and it was horrible. But through all of this, I was still mostly calm. I was mostly calm and relieved. I felt like it was going to be over soon. You know, I was executing my plan. I'm too far to turn around now, like in my mind. So let's just wait this thing out. In my head, I really thought if I could just fall asleep, because I couldn't sleep. So for like from the 14th to the 16th, so for those 2 days, I couldn't sleep, and it was just nonstop gagging, and it was pretty bad. So yeah, even if I did fall asleep, if I fell asleep, then in the moment I tried to like swallow the saliva in my mouth, I would gag and wake up like that. So I would only be asleep for like 30 seconds or so. But I was mostly calm. It did eventually get to a point where just the dehydration, the feeling of being dehydrated, was getting to be too much for me. So I'm like, all right, I just need something to help me survive the dehydration. I was still trying to survive dehydration long enough to die from blood loss. This was the thought process. This is a real, it all made sense in my head. Like, when you see crazy people doing crazy things, like, don't think they don't know that they're crazy. Like, they don't, it makes sense. They have worked it out. And the human mind is an amazing thing. You can convince yourself of damn near anything, you know, if you try hard enough. And so all of this, even this disgusting environment I was living in, all of this made sense at the moment. All of this was for the betterment of something. All of this was supposed to be working out for the betterment of everyone. But eventually, I went to some apps. I think Prime Now, and I ordered myself some Pedialyte and some electrolyte water. And I think I also ordered a Brita pitcher. I don't know. I can't explain that one. I can't explain the Brita pitcher. Yeah, I was obsessed with water at the moment. As I thought I was bleeding out, I ordered Pedialyte electrolyte water and a Brita pitcher. Turquoise. Still have it. I crawled over to the door. I'm leaning up against the door just so I can hear people passing. And I hear the person arrive with my stuff, drop it. I wait for them to walk away, and I wait for it to get quiet in the hallway. And I crack the door open and just, you know, from the bottom of the door, just reach one hand out and slowly drag the stuff in. If anybody was walking past that hotel room, that had to be the creepiest shit they've ever seen. And I can only think that it's because, you know, it's a lot of white people out here that they just see creepy shit and they're good with it. Like, I think if anybody black had walked past that door and seen a hand, a dry ass hand, you know, slowly extending from the bottom of the door to pull in some shit, like, yeah, they would have called the Ghostbusters. They would have called somebody. Like, it wouldn't have just been like, oh, honey, you won't believe what I saw in the hallway. But that was one of the, that was toward the end. Luckily, and as vividly as I remember most of it, I cannot remember what was going through my mind when I made the next couple of decisions. I have been, you know, keeping up with people a little bit on Hangouts, on Google Hangouts. I didn't want anyone to worry to the point that they came looking for me, because I felt like if they worried to the point that they felt like they had to check in on me, they would fuck up the plan. So I was trying to stay present and have some sort of presence online while all of this was going on. I'm talking to my wife, and a friend of mine has sent me a message. He worked at the same place I worked at, and he noticed, you know, what was going on. And he had just sent me a message saying, is there anything I could do to help? What can I do to help you? And at some point in all of this, you know, when I had reached a point where holding my head up was hard, everything required energy. I couldn't sleep, but I had energy to do nothing. There was no comfortable position. There was no way I could lay. I was laying like on the hardwood section of the floor in the hotel room because it was the coolest, and just trying to be around something cool. It was hot. Trying to find a clean place on the floor to lay that, you know, didn't have stuff on it. Keep something next to me so that when I needed to throw up, I wasn't just going to end up lying in it. Because I think if that had happened, if I had thrown up on the floor while I was in that state, I wouldn't have been able to get up to get out of it. I would have just had to lay there in it. And somewhere in there, I grabbed my laptop. And it had to be like a conscious decision because I had to get up. Laptop was dead. I had to plug it in. I had to turn it on. I had to get to Google Hangouts. And I just responded to that friend. And I said, you know, his last message was, is there anything I can do to help? And I just said, take me to the emergency room. And he just so happened to be looking at his phone at the moment. And he responded. And he showed up. And we were trying to get out of the hotel, and you know, I had found the energy to you know, at least put some pants on. I think I was just wearing like boxers and a shirt, and the shirt is wet and covered in stuff, and I don't want to talk about the boxers. But I did get some pants on, no shoes. He came to the door. I didn't want him to come in because I didn't want him to see what you know what had been going on. So he came to the door. I asked him to grab like the water and stuff, and you know I made it maybe two or three steps out of the door into the hallway when I collapsed, and you know, I thought I could at least get to the car. Like in my mind, I could make it to the elevator, make it to the car, and once I made it to the car, I'd be fine. But I didn't make it that far, and he had to call the ambulance. And when they got there, I was laying on that floor. They couldn't find a pulse. And I was conscious. I was talking as best I could. My throat and everything was pretty fucked up. And I was talking to them. My eyes are open. I'm awake. I'm looking at them. I'm talking to them, but they cannot find a pulse. They can't find a pulse with the machines. They can't find a pulse manually. I had become the thing I was like deathly afraid of. I was the walking dead. I was a zombie. I was conscious without a pulse. I was breathing without a discernible pulse. And the next few days were crazy. I ended up in the hospital. I admitted it was a suicide attempt, so I had a watcher at all times. It took everything out of the room. There wasn't even like doorknobs on the door to the bathroom. I couldn't take showers by myself. It was a very humbling experience. But those people, you know, brought me back from the dead pretty much. And the rest is academic. You know, I went to rehab. I did some things. You know, I'm here today, and I'm in a much better situation. I'm not anywhere close to where I want to be. But I'm not on that floor. And so, the point of me sharing this story with you, the point of me saying all of this to you, was not to garner any type of sympathy or anything like that. I just really wanted to be honest, you know, with someone about what happened. And in the hope that, you know, if you can relate to any of the feelings or any of the things I expressed in this story, then I get the chance to say this, and hopefully you can relate to this as well. I was at a point where I didn't see how I could go on. And this is the cool thing I've learned about life and reality and the truth. It's that we don't have to see it, understand it, or agree with it for it to exist, for it to be able to happen. I couldn't see another day, but here we are a year later, and I'm telling you the story. A year ago, I could not imagine a way I was going to exist for very much longer. And we're a year later, and I now wake up with hope. I go places, you know. Like I said, my life is not perfect, but I'm not on that floor. I'm not on that floor physically, and I'm not on that floor mentally. I'm in a different place, and I couldn't see it. And beauty, you know, the beauty of life is that you don't have to understand it. It doesn't have to make sense to you. You don't even have to agree with it for it to just exist, for it to be possible. And I've seen the impossible happen. I've seen it happen to me. So, I don't know, maybe the lesson that I needed to learn was simply that I didn't need to know how strong I was. I didn't need to know if I had the strength to make it through something. If I didn't understand it, if I didn't see it, if I didn't believe it, it didn't mean it wasn't true. I just needed to keep going. And, you know, and hopefully, like I said earlier, wise men learn from the mistakes of others. And I think that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to share my mistake so that you don't have to learn the hard way that you're stronger than you think. that what you think you can't survive, you can. And that there are people that care, and I'm one of them. And if you ever need me, if you ever need to talk about anything, anyone, I'm here. You know how to find me. Let me be of service, because you'd be helping me out more than you know by doing so. All right. So with all that said, I guess the lesson for today is, what can Flan do for you? Let me help. I need it. Hit me up. All right. So last but not least, before I get out of here with all the deep shit, hope y'all stuck with me and not grossed out. Last week I talked about Dumb Chick out anthems. You know, if you've listened to the show, maybe you know what I think of what I consider Dumb Chick anthems. Some of these crazy songs about the dumbass relationships and like knowing they're in love with the wrong people, but making songs about them, and then they become like these huge hits. Like I keep, what is it? The I Keep On Falling joint, and with the Monica song. Am I crazy because I want to have his babies? Yes, you're crazy. But yeah, I made fun of Dumb Chick anthems because I was playing Lions and Tigers and Bears by Jasmine Sullivan. And then Karma Like It Does. My daughter comes over the next day and I still got the sound on my mixer for the podcast. And she's playing with it and she hits the song and it becomes like her favorite thing for the entire day. So my, you know, I've been sitting here laughing at Dumb Chick anthems, and then I spent like an entire day listening to Lions, Tigers, and Bears 30 times in a row. So I apologize if I offended anybody. Seems like life got me first. So I paid for it. My bad. But yeah, I'm going to let y'all go. As usual, be safe and think twice before you light that badussy. We don't know the long-term effects, people. It is called badussy. I didn't make that up. We don't know the long-term effects, people, so be careful with that. But be safe, be the light. TTCharities.org, hit them up. Them my people. I love y'all. I appreciate all your support. Buy some merch. But until we speak again, one more time, I'm going to say it again. Be safe, be the light. Let's rock out.
Yeah, heater on a dresser, stomach growling, I'm thinking how can I